Welcome to the Tripod, where we break down the NRL every game, every week from a punting perspective. I'm Jacob Wynn, he's the Podonis, and tonight we are live to recap Magic Round, Round 10. We're actually 24 hours later than usual due to some commitments, and I felt like people might have been all footied out just about after a triple header Sunday and the later finish. So we've had an extra day to digest all the action, and it wasn't a good weekend overall for us, kind of two steps forward, one step back with our results, because we lost both our best bets and they tied into the mixed matchup, which we lost as well. And when we come up with these bets every week, it's like all you can really do, there's no such thing as finding a sure winner, or there's no bet that's definitely going to lose before the event when you're trying to pick two-way 50-50 markets, but you're trying to come up with bets that'll win 60% plus. And we'll get to it, but I look at our two bets from the weekend and the position that they were in, and they're far beyond 60% winners, but they both find a way to lose. But we will get to that, Podonis. I wanted to add a special segment in tonight as well, and we'll go a little bit briefer on the games. And the special segment was going to be talking all about unique odds, because the one shining light of the weekend was probably the Dabble Extravaganza market, Podonis. Hopefully you enjoyed backing that, where we got every individual jersey number to score and cash at $4 for the boys.
Yeah, that was a beautiful multi to hit over the round. Provided some entertainment for those that wanted to follow all eight games, because as you all know, we only had our best bet in two of the games, and it was a nice, fun one. And it's always good to cheer try scorers. We always think there's more value in unders, but this was a prime example that of a way where we can get points. And everyone was sort of predicting that there was a lot of rain around this weekend in Brisbane and the games would be slow pace and dire, but I think it was the opposite. The overall points total, I think if you looked at it across a few bookmakers, around 310 for the total points across the entire weekend, and it sailed well over that. There was plenty of tries and some high flair and fantastic footy, and that's what everyone wants to see when you have a carnival atmosphere like we did have in Brisbane.
Yeah, it did actually open up, and there were more points than anybody probably expected, and especially after the first game, which was a bit of a dour affair, then it looked like grim weather and maybe some grim footy, but that first game was actually the exception. That was the lowest scoring game of the round, and things did pick up, scoring did pick up. That helped with our try scorer bet, I believe. And it just goes to show it's never that easy to make money. You know, like people might have thought, oh, well, it's raining all weekend, I'll bet a bunch of unders. But I don't think the under actually hit in that many games in the end, because all the totals were that bit lower. And there actually were a few tries in these games. But right, before we talk about the games, just want to, touch on this, because I thought it was a really interesting topic conversation this weekend around the extravaganza market, which I'll bring up now, which we're very happy to celebrate that this won. And you said it gave us fun for eight games, but this had won 20 minutes into the first game on Sunday. So we had nearly three full games to spare, in fact. And, one thing that we're very grateful for is the opportunity that we have through the Tripod platform to create custom, unique markets. And we've had that chance over the last couple of years with several, bookies that support our show, and things like the mixed matchup itself, or the fun that we had with the Olympics gold medal tally multi. And Dabble's come to the party with some cool, unique markets for us this year. And the goal when we create these markets, we want them to be fun to punt on. We want to add something. I like to add something that ties in several events, because it's like a multi. You can get more bang for your buck. You've got excitement over multiple events. I want it to be something fun to cheer in general, but I also want to find value. And that's not always easy to do, because you don't want to bet on really obvious outcomes that, everyone wants to be on that, but you're not going to get the value. So that process is something that I've got to go through weekly, and you get involved with me for some of these. And then we do, unique ones for special events like we had last year. What did we have? Euros. We've had everything, if you include over the summer, even like martial arts events, MMA, boxing, Premier League, we've had it all, NBA, NFL, right? So, the process, just to let people know about how we come about the price, you got to put the work in first, and we've got to be comfortable with what probability we think this bet is of hitting. Because if you've got a probability in mind, and it might not always be the easiest thing, because the thing is, usually with a normal market, it's a marketplace. Everyone's pretty confident what the odds should be. You know, if you look at any of our best bets, it's a two-way market. And if the odds were massively wrong, somebody would have already bet it before Wednesday. So that's our challenge on Wednesday with our best bets. We're betting into a liquid market with the unique odds. You know, there's a challenge, and it's a challenge for us to come up with what the odds should be. It's a challenge for the bookies to set the odds sometimes. So there's always that negotiation. So I try and come up with like what odds I would want. Then it's a little bit of cat and mouse with the bookies. You know, I'm going to say to them, I'm going to ask for the highest possible. They're going to want to give me the lowest possible. But the thing is, I will never give out a bet to Tripod followers that I don't believe is value. So I'm not going to budge below a price that I can accept. And, you know, there's been times where a bookie just won't go any higher than a price that I need. And maybe it's because they see it differently and we can't even agree that we're on a fair price, that they think the price should be a lot lower than I'm asking. And I'm saying, well, no, I can't justify giving it out any lower. And I just have to say, all right, I'll change the bet. I'm not giving out that bet. So that's always been the case. That's my mantra with anything, any best bet, any unique market, any multi, I wouldn't give it out unless I would want my own money on that. So that's like our filter to make sure that we can, you know, share odds and share bets of the highest standard. And it's a hard one because the bookies are going to be like, oh, well, you know, if we get the odds a bit too low, what's the worst that's going to happen? Your followers probably won't back it. But if they get the odds too high, it could cost them a lot of money. And there's been occasions where it has cost bookies a lot of money coming out with unique markets too high. But I think people trust us so much that they will back something that we tip. And I want to have this conversation with you, Podonis, before we talk about Magic Round, because the truth of the matter is a lot of the time people don't know what the odds should be for a unique market. So can you talk about any experiences you've got, whether you want to talk about this particular one, the extravaganza, or other times where a unique market came out, and how you actually assess the most important question in punting, which is it value?
Yeah, so the first step that I always take when looking at that is, and you touched on there, a lot of the custom markets, only you can only bet in one direction or only on one side of a coin flip, if you put it in that frame. So I always like to look for the opposite and try to work out what the odds will be for something not to happen. And you can either go to multiple bookmakers to try to find that, or you can have a look at different type of exotic markets that are out there, or you can even use the Betfair Exchange as an example of one way. So if you look at the mixed matchup, for example, where we give that out every week, where it's usually, typically, it's one team to outscore the other team, that's using both their team totals and what that is on the Wednesday afternoon. One team might be higher and lower, and you work out the two percentages, and when you combine it all, that gives you a percentage for that way. But I wanted to touch on the extravaganza, because there's been a lot of conjecture in the group over the weekend, and particularly around the forwards and the props, that people were putting out blanket comments saying that props not very likely, or the odds of this bet isn't very good. But when I look at it, for example, and I wanted to break
down... Before you do, I'll set the table even further. So I'll just remind people, it was anybody to score, all 13 positions to score, all 13 starting jersey numbers to score over the weekend. So obviously, apart from one or two substitutions and late inclusions, you essentially have 16 players at each position, one for every single team, right? And we got there. And going into it, and I said, admittedly, when I did my own preparation, it was clear that the three that were going to be the most challenging, and the reason this was going to be a decent odds bet, was number 8, number 10, and number 13, the three middle forwards. And people did challenge it, and that's fine. That's what it's all about, the forum. You know, we want people to challenge odds. You know, I would say I don't take it personally, but then I actually have to qualify that. I don't take it personally at all if someone says I disagree, and someone says I disagree and this is why. I do occasionally take it personally when people say things like, you're only tipping that because you work with them, or you're being paid to tip that, because that's actually where, you know, I feel like someone's questioning my integrity, like that I would do something that wasn't the best for the followers, and that's just not true. So I never would. So, you know, people have seen, I will jump to my own defense in comments, and I will have it out with people a little bit. I try and always be respectful about it. But then the other thing that gets me a little bit, I know it's always going to happen, but it still gets me, is when people say that's shit odds, terrible odds, but they don't give any reason. And I honestly feel like 99% of the time, that person doesn't know what the odds should be. And in this occasion, it's a mathematical formula. Like, we can debate what the assumptions are that go in, but it's a mathematical process to decide what the odds should be. So unless someone wanted to say that's wrong because mathematically, you know, the fair assumptions would be this, then, you know, I'll have that discussion. But, you know, we always get that, get it with the mixed matchup. Oh, mixed matchups, terrible odds. I heard that so many times last year. And yet I think it was the most profitable bet anybody could have possibly made in terms of ROI over, you know, 30 weeks. But be that as it may. And in the end, the funny thing is, we said, people said, you know, you're not going to get a number eight to score, number 10, number 13, let alone all three. We had two number eight score, Papali'i, which was the final anchor that won the multi. But Warrior Hargrave scored the first try the very next game, number eight. We had three number 10s, DeBellin, Wallace, and Cotter as well. We had two 13s. We had Jazz Tavunga and Harawira Naira as well. So it's not even like it was just one that got over. We got two or three in those positions. But yeah, what did you make of that market coming into the weekend? How did you feel about it?
Yeah, so coming into it over the weekend, and I did go and check back, and it has happened. This was the third time this year that it's happened in 10 rounds. So that can sort of give you an idea already of where the odds should be. If it's happened 3 in 10, then that's around a 33% strike rate at the moment. So that can give you some guide, but then looking at the markets itself, and I wanted to specifically just quickly highlight an example with the props, the numbers 8 and 10. So in any particular game, not across the round, but in one game on a standalone game, assuming all props are 5-1 odds to score a try any time, you're looking at around 41% chance of a prop scoring in any NRL game. And that's around $1.69, $1.70 odds. So a lot of people are saying that props don't score, but the reality is if you were betting on a prop to score in one game, it would be the favorite in that market. So that's where I wanted to come from and highlight this, that a prop to if you looked at the opposite of a prop not to score a try, then it's around 59%, which would be around $2.45 or $2.50 for a prop not to score in a game. So it does show you that when we give out a bet, we do think it's value, and it showed across the weekend with multiple prop scoring. And that's where I wanted to come from and highlight that.
Well, I would kind of push back there, but this brings up the issue and maybe the trap that I fell into myself is that you talked about, you know, sample size. Now, you said 3 in 10, but keep in mind it won this weekend. So you could argue it had only happened two times before this weekend. So we can't say, you know, because it happened this weekend, it also proves the value. I also argue that 10 weeks is still a very small sample size. You know, if we picked a player and said this player has scored three tries this year, so therefore he should be, you know, after nine rounds, so that player should be a 1 in 3 to score in round 10. That could be wildly wrong. There's wingers in the comp that have only got like one try this season. You wouldn't get $3 or you wouldn't get 10-1 on them. And there's other players that have scored three tries, but you'd want much higher odds than that as well. So I didn't come at it from like how many times has this happened this season. And also I didn't feel that the weather would be factored in enough for that. So I know some people challenged it on that aspect, where I feel like you need a sample of 20, 40, 50 weeks, 100 weeks to know. So I looked at it for the markets this weekend. Now, you said props to score being 5-1, but to be honest, if a bookie's giving you $5 odds on a prop to score, they are ripping you off. And that is the truth, that bookies do rip you off on anytime try score odds, mostly across the board. They're trying to, because it's not the easiest thing to price. They can't analyze every single player, every single stat, like the stats man, every single matchup. So they just want them generally to be across the board, not great prices. Here and there, there'll be opportunities. Like here and there where a team might be set to perform a lot better than market expectations. The other thing we have up our sleeve with try score prices, they vary a bit across the market. So you can find an outlier where you might find value. But you should assume that if you look across a range of try scores, especially at one bookie, they're not value. And I actually thought most props and most starting props, and keep in mind they don't all play the full 80, or most of them don't play the full 80, even $10 is probably skinny. So I came into this to share my process with how I came up with this odds. I said that the average price across the 16 props would be $15. So a fair price of 15-1 for each prop. And I said the same, you know, for number 8, number 10, and I said the same for 13. Maybe 13 score slightly more often, but, you know, I was trying to be conservative. And I was conservative with every position. Then I could come up with the probability that they wouldn't score in every game. And then I just basically took that to the power of 8, because basically what it becomes is a multi that the bookie needs the no to win 8 times. And we need the yes to happen at least once. So someone commented, oh, well, one of the props was paying more than $4 to score, so you didn't get good odds. But that's missing the point, because we didn't need to know which players it was going to be. That would be like picking a team to win a game, you know, 13+, and they win by 24, and someone says, oh, well, the exact margin of 24 paid this, you should have bet that. But you don't need to know exactly how it's going to win. You just need a lot of range of outcomes in your favor. So I did that. So, you know, 15-1 fair price, which is like 6-7% in that range for each prop and middle forwards. And then I think I went like 33% chance for edge back rowers and for centers. I was pretty conservative, because most centers are going to pay under $3, you know, but I'm looking for true probability. And I worked it all out, and I came out with the assessment that that try score bet should win between one in every 3 or 4. So my probability was in the high 20%. So therefore I knew $4 was a good price. Now, maybe my mistake, and this is always the dance I've got to do with the bookies, is when I present the price to them, if I give an outrageous, crazy price, I actually hurt my own bargaining position. So I've got to be realistic. So I said, I'm looking for $4 at least, but you guys have a look at it as well. Maybe you can go higher because it's wet, even though I already felt like being wet was not a disadvantage, because it might lead to more higher proportion of forward scoring tries. So then Dabble came back with $4. And whenever you say this, and then I said to myself, I shouldn't have said at least $4. I should have gone for higher, because they met me at that price. I was still comfortable with it, because as I said, I was conservative with my assessment, and I came out with a higher expected value than you would get at $4. So I was happy with that. But then, to be fair, this is the part that I want to give credit to people that challenged it, and that's why the pods, this is what it's all about. Some people really challenged and said, you know, how often do props score? And made me really rethink that $15 that I came up with was kind of biased by the fact that I was comparing it to the typical market, and the market usually has these props priced from, like, you know, maybe a Papali'i or whatever might be $8 to score, because he's actually a bit more of a renowned try scoring prop. But the majority of them, 8, 9, 12s, 14s, maybe 15s is a bit generous. But that's what the bookies price. But the true probability and the true odds for a lot of these props should probably, some of them should be in the 20s. And that's the part I might have got wrong. And you look at a guy like Alex Twell, I believe he might play his 100th game this coming weekend, and hasn't scored yet, you know. And mind you, several has been off the bench and stuff. But it really made me second guess myself and say, and this is my confession, I said, you know, if I just slightly tweak those percentages, and instead of being 6 or 7% to score for the middle forwards, if I tweak that down to like 5%, maybe that's a fair argument. Maybe, you know, it is more like the 4 or 5%. Well, when you go to the power of 16, which is 2 per game and 8 games, that significantly changes the probability. And I started to feel like I actually may have sold us a little short here. I don't know. Like, I definitely didn't feel as good about it. And I felt kind of sick to ever tip something and not feel that great about the price. So people challenging me, I respect that. And it made me like second guess my own process. And I thought I was being conservative, but I'm not perfect. And maybe I should have probably bargained for a slightly better price. Now, at the end of the day, as I say, it's not even like it just scraped home. We got 2 or 3 from every middle forward. And now people are asking, and this is my final point on this, now people are asking, they want that bet every week. But I'm not sure if $4 was a great price, to be completely honest with you guys. I'm certainly happy we're 100% on it. But I don't think I can really push it with Dabble and get a better than $4 price because of the fact that it won and the fact of how much it cost them. So, you know, that's the challenge with any of these unique markets, especially once you win a couple, you get a couple over them. Their traders are in the business of trying to do the exact opposite of what we're doing, which is serve up odds to punters that are not value, that are not positive EV. So that's the challenge that's there for us. That's our motivation. Hopefully, just thought, you know, on a Monday night, we'll do a unique segment and talk about that, because it is something that I've built into the tripod more in the last couple of years. And it's a cool part that we can have these shared experiences on these fun, unique bets. And hopefully people have found that interesting, hearing a bit more behind the scenes. Speaking of the bookies, let's actually hear how they did and how the punters did for round 10 before we do a rapid fire recap of the 8 games.
Thanks, Rockwood family. Tristan from Top Squad here, and we've finished Magic Round, and what a topsy-turvy round that was. There was some blowouts, there were some big upsets, there was some really tight games, some golden point games, low scoring to start, and then when I think everyone expected the totals to drop and to for the track to play poorly on the last day and there to be, you know, low scoring games, we had 3 games to go overs on Sunday. So it was a funny old weekend. The weekend got off to a bad start for us. The Knights were smashed. Yeah, they were slight underdogs, but you know, punters backed them, and they backed all the unders options. I think that was the theme where early on in the piece, particularly with the rain expected and hitting just before that game, a lot of punters took the unders options. So that got us off on a bad foot. The Broncos were really backed well late as well, so happy to lose there. So it was a bad Friday night. Saturday, you know, the Warriors were unwanted in that game, and you know, we thought we're looking down the barrel of a very ordinary result there, but they did something which I couldn't believe. They came right back into that game and almost pinched it late. And then, of course, the big move for the Panthers, where no Jerome Hughes saw that line go from 2 out to 4.5, and it was very much one-way traffic for the Panthers in that game. So the punters were definitely on top after the first 2 days, but then on Sunday, the big upset where the Raiders handled the Sharks, which I don't think anyone saw coming, and that knocked out a lot of the multi, so that helped us get back onto the scoreboard. The Roosters were actually well back too in their game, and then the Cowboys finished off strong, and they were quite well supported. So it was a weekend overall where it was up and down, and we just got our nose in front, really just on the back of that big one upset from Canberra. So look, we obviously put up the market for the Magic Cup, and we popped that up, and Adam Reynolds was the victor in that. He saluted at $19. So there's plenty of punters that got involved in that. It was a little bit different, something that I think a lot of people enjoyed. And yeah, he was 18 out to 19 and got the result. So hope everyone enjoyed the footy, and we'll see what happens this weekend. See you guys.
Yeah, the Magic Cup was a fun initiative, and that was a player performance market and highest scoring player performance from the field of 24 based on those statistical measures. And Reynolds, who had it on a string on Friday night, actually put up a score that nobody exceeded over the weekend. And shout out to the 5 guys, your 4 compatriots, Podonis, who joined you with the weekly multi that you guys are already up plus 30 units or so, and had a couple of close calls when you didn't win. And shout out to BJ Willie 1003, Benny, who also had a 200-1 try scorer multi that came down to the final leg and unfortunately failed. Talakai, as he did come close a couple of times as well for the Sharkies. But let's rewind to how the round began. And as I said, we'll do this rapid fire. And it was Newcastle 16 beating the Bulldogs 6. News today that Trent Barrett stepped down. If you saw this game, you wouldn't be surprised. Why would you, Podonis?
No, you wouldn't. And if you listen to the press conference, then equally, you will be even less surprised. Such was his attitude and lackadaisical mindset. Didn't really have much to say. Scratching for answers, and sums up the Bulldogs' year so far. Too many errors, and the Knights were strong and resilient where they had to be. Not that the Knights were very good with the ball in their own respect. Very dour game, as you touched on at the top, at 16-6. And it was a case of the side that made the least errors won the game, and the Bulldogs had 2 crucial errors in the form of defensive lapses when the Knights strolled in for 2 tries in that second half of some poor reads, and looked like under-12s defending at times.
Yeah, it was a shame that this one kicked off Magic Round. Luckily, it didn't set the tone, but the big takeaway for me is that the Dogs were so, so bad. Anybody would have beaten them. They were pitiful, honestly. It was embarrassing. And the fact that the Knights only won by 10, I don't think the Knights played well. And O'Brien, in his press conference, said afterwards, it didn't matter how we won, we just needed to win. And I felt like that was a cop-out. No, hang on, why doesn't it matter how you win? Shouldn't you really needed to win that game? Shouldn't you have played well? Like, he's making excuses for his team not playing well because, oh, well, we just wanted to be scrappy. No, anybody else would have beaten Bulldogs by 20 plus. Actually, the Knights were nearly as bad and kept the Dogs in the game for way too long. But yeah, I was mind blown at how bad Canterbury were, and certainly didn't. I didn't gain any respect for Newcastle, to be completely honest, in that one. But I did gain some respect for your Brisbane Broncos, who won 38-0, third straight week, as an underdog getting the win. And this was, of course, over the Manly Seagulls. How did they do it?
$3 to one at the start of the season to make the top eight that I gave out on the preview. And that's about $1.35, $1.40 at some places at the moment. So Brisbane are absolutely flying, and Adam Reynolds is absolutely flying. And I think Manly didn't turn up for this game, showed off the first bounce off the kickoff, going dead, having a dropout, plenty of unforced errors on both sides of the ball. And Brisbane were just more up for it and hungrier. And you touched on the crowd would play a role and be a factor for them to help get them over the line. And once they started getting some momentum, they just steamrolled Manly. And Selwyn Cobbo, he's come from the clouds and is really excelling. And great to see. And plenty of smiles on the faces there in the Broncos camp after some lean years.
My biggest takeaway from this game is Turbo should not have played. What were they thinking? He was nowhere near right. Why would he be out there limping around? And we said the only reason we think Manly should be a favourite in this game is Turbo. Felt like everything else was in the Broncos' favour, and we were just scared off by that Turbo factor. You know, he got a week under his belt last week against the Tigers. You thought he'd be better. He wasn't right. He shouldn't have played. He killed Manly. He killed Supercoach people. I follow a little bit more with the winning mood show we do on a Wednesday. Shouldn't have played. So now I want to give Brisbane all the credit in the world. And Adam Reynolds is close to the form player in the comp. And Cobbo was outstanding. And Brisbane's, they are the real deal. And we said this after 2 weeks, and then they had a couple of lapses. And then we said, oh, did we jump the gun a bit? Did we believe the hype a little bit? But now they've come good and they've won four in a row, I believe. Yeah. And shooting for five next week. And the only thing I'm going to say is, do we need to question or do we need to reconsider how good some of these wins have been recently? Because on paper, it looks awesome. Seagulls, top four last year, 38-0, right? But I'm telling you, Turbo was a shell of himself. Manly was shot. And then last week, they beat the Rabbitohs. But how good are the Rabbitohs right now? You know, yeah, they made the grand final last year, but they're not playing that way right now. And the week before, they beat the Sharks. And we all think the Sharks are a top four caliber side, but they came back down to earth on the weekend too. So I don't mean to, you know, pour a little bit of cold water on this Broncos steam train at the moment, but yeah, you can say, you can look at it two ways in terms of how hot their opponents have been, but you can't really fault what Brisbane's doing, and they've been beating everyone that's in front of them for sure. It was kicked off Saturday with the South Sydney Rabbitohs 32 defeating the Warriors 30, and the scoreline makes it sound like it was a nail biter. I don't know. I don't think the Rabbitohs were ever in any danger of losing this game. In fact, they did lead it 32-6. And then I couldn't even believe what I was watching after that, Padonis.
Yeah, this was a shocking result in the end. So that it was one of our best bets. We had South minus 3.5 in the second half. And we were questioning all week whether we do take the 6.5 for the full match line. And after 40 minutes, I was regretting not going all in and taking that 6.5 as well. They were up 26-0 after 39 minutes. I think it was a crucial no try call for South just before halftime. And the Warriors got the other end and score. So that was a 10-12 point swing just before halftime. And I still feel that was a harsh call. Maybe I'm talking through my bet a bit there. But in the second half, the Warriors got some momentum. And South never really stand back and made plenty of errors themselves. And then once the Warriors had a man advantage, and it was a lot different than last week when they had a man advantage, but this time they actually did something with it. And I was disappointed to hear Demetrio's press conference saying that they had quite a few injuries leading up into that, and they had three or four players that had the flu during the week. And Demetrio sat there and said, oh, I did expect us to tie late, which is not what we want to hear when we've bet on them in the second half alone. But regardless of that, South did enough to get the win, although it was scrappy. But I didn't feel that they were in any danger either. And I felt that they were a lot more dominant than what the final scoreline showed.
The fact that they were never in danger is why they didn't really care. And they let New Zealand score 24 almost meaningless points. You know, like they're not meaningless points if New Zealand would have got a miracle 2-point field goal at the end or you know, scored at the end and actually came all the way back. But because the Rabbitohs are like, oh, we're up 26, we're fine, and then it's 20, then it's 14, and then it's 8, but then they were down to 12 men. But for our second half bet, it was tragic. And the Rabbitohs came out the way we expected. They certainly came out very strong, and they were executing as well as we've ever seen, even in not ideal conditions. And the Warriors seemed still a little bit shell-shocked from last week, and nothing went right for the Warriors, and they did spill a couple opportunities to score. And the Warriors, who we bet against for the mixed matchup, took the longest to score any points of any team. They were 39 minutes scoreless. They scored on the final play of the first half, which again was off like a ball that was spilled in behind the Warriors' line. So I feel like the Rabbitohs could have got set. But anyway, you give up one try at halftime. So it's 26-6, I think, at halftime. Still a 20-point lead. The live line in the game is 27.5. So as I mentioned in the group, we're laying 3.5 second half. The live line, 7.5. The Rabbitohs score first in the second half. So now we're like a 13.5-point favorite, and we're laying 3.5. And then, you know, when are we ever going to have a team that scores 24 unanswered at the end of a game to win us a bet? Let alone the big underdog that's been pumped all day. But I will say, in the second half, Toho Harris came on, and it really did stiffen up the New Zealand middle, while the Rabbitohs brought on Nikorima and played him in the middle, and that did not work. And the Cooks in been a bit harsh, but you got to live with that. And certainly that helped the Warriors fuel their comeback, and they probably wanted to make a point of being able to score points against a reduced opponent, and they did. They scored all these backdoor points. So that cost us two bets in one, basically, because we lost our best bet. And it made the mixed matchup very steep mountain to climb with 30 points to overcome for the Warriors. We were hoping it'd be kind of half of that at the most. Later on, a game that went to the wire and then some, the Gold Coast Titans 20 beat the Dragons 16 in Golden Point. Do they deserve to win this one, Padonis?
In hindsight, I feel like the Dragons lost the game rather than the Titans win it. But it was there for the taking for both teams. Both teams couldn't put the other one away when it was 12-10 there for a large period in the second half, and the game was tight. The Titans did come out hard, and it was a lot different to last week against the Roosters. And we did warn that in the preview that all the early tipping was for the Dragons, but it wouldn't have been that easy, and it proved to be quite the opposite. And then the Gold Coast got a try in Golden Point there to win 20-16. Azarko scoring in the corner, and the Titans celebrating. The Dragons, I think, rue some missed chances, plenty of field goals they missed.
The other thing I was going to say about South, the one thing that at least helps me sleep a little better is if we were tossing up between -6.5 for the game or -3.5 for the second half, at least it didn't end up covering, because you feel kind of worse if the team that you pick doesn't cover or does cover the full game line, but you try and get too cute, and we're trying to get an extra edge by playing it second half. And in the end, neither one would have worked. So it would have been a bad beat either way. Or I'm not saying second half was that bad of a beat, but certainly if you laid -6.5 with the Rabbitohs and they're up 26 and cruising, that was a tough one. So I guess you look at it that way. We took the Rabbitohs. They didn't cover. We get what we deserve. But in this game, Titans, Dragons, I'm at least glad that we didn't play the Dragons, because you know what? The more I thought about this game, I thought you take the Dragons at $1.85. And evidently, I put them in our double multi for the weekend, because I felt that they were a pretty solid bet. And then there were rumors that the Titans had a couple of players with the flu. I don't think they ended up losing any personnel, and nothing came out of it in the press conference. But the Dragons did shorten up. They're like $1.65 on game day and -3.5. And I agree. I think they should have won this game. In the end, Sloan came into fullback. Amone was 6. Mbai started at 9. Sullivan came off the bench and played some hooker. And I do feel that Dragons, after being down a try at halftime, got themselves back into the game and on top and up a try with 5 minutes to go, miss a late conversion that was pretty makeable for Lomax, would have pushed them to a lead of 8. The fact that it was only 6 got the Titans the opportunity to level the scores with one try. They got that late in the game. And then, as you say, back and forth, both teams had field goal opportunities. And the Titans, and it was a Zarko score, but it was the move by Jaden Campbell off the scrum where they almost seemed fed up with going for field goals, went for the try. And I will say, we like the talent of the Titans, but we just haven't seen them put it together. We've been calling for Campbell to come back into this team, but we question whether it would be the right conditions for him. But even in slippery conditions, He was outstanding. He's proven that he has to be there, and he was probably the best player on the field and instrumental in that win. Saturday nightcap, a little bit of a disappointing one because it was kind of billed as the game of the season and certainly the game of Magic Round. And unfortunately, with the withdrawal of Jerome Hughes after, of course, losing Pappenhausen the week before, Penrith ended up being a 4.5-point favourite, but it wasn't that close on the night. They won 32-6, the defending premiers. So what did you make of that? Does that show that everyone else is playing for second, Podonis?
No, I wouldn't call it everyone's playing for second. I still feel that the Storm will be right up there when the whips are cracking towards the end of the season. One of the key takeaways for me is that Storm had a 50% completion rate in the first 15 minutes. And when I look up at the scoreboard, they're down 12-0 with the Panthers scoring a try off a kick there as well. Storm did well to get themselves back in the game and wrestle some of that contest back. And I think it was a killer blow just before halftime with 3 minutes to go, and it was 14-6. And Wishart, who's tried hard, and he did have a good game and he recovered well, but he made a brutal error just before halftime to concede a try when Viliami Kikau was running down on him off a Cleary bomb, and he spills it in the in goal. Penrith scores 20-6 at halftime. Melbourne come out, drop their heads in the second half, and it was more of the same from the Panthers, where they get into this cycle where teams struggle to make any territory and they have 20 or 30 meter sets. And we didn't think we'd see it in a game of this magnitude against such a classy opponent in the Storm, but it did happen here. And Panthers put it on the stranglehold again. And I think a shining light for Melbourne is only conceding 12 points in the second half. Just considering the sheer dominance and weight of possession that the Panthers did have. So I'm not going to take anything away from the Storm. They'll get better once those key individuals come back. But the Panthers had to win and had to stamp their authority, given that the Storm did have those outs.
Yeah, it's a missed opportunity for us because a full-strength Penrith, I mean, I certainly felt when it was close to kickoff, or even once I heard the whispers that Hughes could be out and you could see the market moving, I just came into that game, but like thinking, there's no way Storm will stay near him. Like, Penrith's going to win this really well. Whereas, you know, on Wednesday, I made the case why the Storm could still win. And back then, we didn't know anything about this Hughes news. We didn't know that he didn't train all week. And I really feel it's like a cluster injury case scenario for the spine, where you miss one player, one key player. The others can all compensate and lift a bit more. But you lose two key players that are both running threats, but also it's your halfback, your organization, kicking game as well. That suddenly felt like a larger magnitude now, and this made the Storm a very different team and put it all on Munster. And that just gave such an edge to Penrith. And then they started fast. They got out 12-0. Munster nabbed one try back in a stroke of brilliance with a steal and then a crossfield kick. But that was it. And then, I thought the guys that were asked to, play that weren't usually in those key positions, they did struggle. Storm lost Big Nelson to an MCL. And the Panthers, they understand something about the modern rugby league. Or maybe other teams understand it, but they can't do it like Penrith can, which is just squeezing you in that vice and just tightening and tightening the grip. And Penrith understands that if you are not applying pressure to your opponent, they will be applying it to you. So even if you're up 20, 24, whatever, 28, like if you just think that's enough, let's cruise, you are inviting pressure back on yourself. And if Penrith had relaxed, the Storm are such a good side that would never have given up the fight. The Storm would have come back and probably scored a couple of tries on them late, but Penrith never relaxed, unlike the Rabbitohs earlier on Saturday. And Penrith, yeah, I agree, Storm did well to only concede 2 second-half tries because Penrith had them under pressure the entire 80 minutes just about. So from that perspective, the scoreline doesn't really surprise. And, Melbourne probably needed that reality check as well, just to remind themselves they've still got areas of improvement. But it's early days. The Storm put on a very similar score against Penrith last year as well in the regular season. And that got changed, that got flipped around in the finals. Okay, moving to Sunday. This game hurt us as well. As I said, the mixed matchup needed a miracle, but I still felt very confident about our best bet, which was -5.5 in the second half with the Sharks. Well, they lost the game 30-10. So if all you saw was the final score, you'd think, well, of course, you know, you didn't win your second half bet. But it was 20-0 at halftime to the Raiders. Perfect scenario for our bet to win, Podonis, and somehow it still didn't.
Yeah, 100%. That's the dream scenario when we have a handicap that we did of -5.5 in the second half. The live line was 6.5, and the Sharks got it back to 20-10. And you've heard all the talk all weekend about the Raiders going down to 11 men at one stage and having three sin bins in the second half. And at that point, when it was 20-10, the live line was -17.5 for the second half line, sorry. So we're in a great spot. Still didn't help us there with the Raiders scoring a few tries late on. But I think it was a case of the Sharks did come out a bit flat, even though we found enough reasons to suggest that that wouldn't be the case. And Raiders did score some pretty fortuitous and fluky tries. And I would have loved to have been on a team like Canberra to score three tries the way that they did, because it never seems to happen on the other end of some kicks. And I just think back to the one where Katoa was standing there on the sideline and had his hand up trying to block out the sun. And then you see Canberra come through and grab the ball out of the sky when we didn't even get a contest for it. So I think that sums up the day for the Sharks. It was just a case of being a little bit slower in all the key areas, and the Raiders were a bit too physical. And it goes to show you in the NRL is that if you're not up mentally and physically and you're just at 5% down, the other team can beat you. It doesn't matter how bad their run of results have been.
Yeah, the physicality is the thing. So let's just talk about the result. Like, how did the Raiders win this game by 20? They were just the more intense, the more hungry. And the story of this game was the Raiders' defense. The Raiders' defense was awesome for the whole game, not just the first half where they kept the Sharks scoreless. Even when the Raiders had a man sent to the bin with 5 minutes to go in the second half and the Sharks were putting on some pressure, and a late first half try would have been vital for the Sharks in their comeback. And the Raiders turned them away and then came out second half, and the Raiders turned them away, you know, most of the second half, despite everything possible going against the Raiders. So if I ask, like, how did the Sharks not cover the second half line? They're down 20. Pre-game, they're a -12 favorite. The Raiders had a man in the sin bin 5 minutes to go in the first half. So they also had to come out with 12. They copped two additional sin bins, including at one point, a couple of the sin bins overlapping. Now, people can say it was against 11. They were only down to 11 for like 2 minutes. So I think the Sharks might have had the ball for one set at best. But regardless, no excuses, because the Sharkies played against 12 men for most of the second half, had ample opportunities, set after set. They did score a couple of tries. That almost makes it hurt even more, because they were winning the second half 10-0. They did cut it from 20-10. And with like 20 minutes to go, 15 to go, the Sharkies could have still won. We all know the Raiders are famous for choking on leads. So it really felt like the Sharks were coming for them. An assumption we made was that Nicho Hynes moving to fullback, Trindle into the halves, might not hurt their attack. Well, that was incorrect. It definitely did. They definitely didn't have their timing, and you probably would have wanted Nicho in his more familiar position this season, getting his hands on the ball at first receiver a bit more. So in retrospect, like, that, we got that part wrong, because the positional shifting, it didn't help. But I just don't know, like, how the Raiders covered that second half line. In fact, in the end, it was 10-all in the second half. And you know what's even crazier? So the Sharkies are up 10-0 in the second half, which is 20-10. They give up a try totally against the run of play to Schneider. And, of course, it's a converted try. So now the Sharkies are winning the second half by 4, and we're laying 5.5. So I'm going, all right, fine. The Sharks have to score a try in the final 4 minutes now. I mean, they've got a chance. They're going to be throwing it around. They're throwing it around, and with a minute to go, they throw an intercept, and Hudson Young takes it back, and you go, all right, we lost. But actually, he scores, the clock stops, they miss a pretty easy conversion, the Sharks kick off, the Raiders spill it, and the Sharks pack a scrum with 11 seconds to go. And I didn't even realize that the scores were 10-all in the second half. So if the Sharks score a converted try on the final play of the game, we actually would have miraculously won that bet. They shifted off the scrum. Tracy runs a great line. They give him a face ball. He crashes, and a 3-man desperation tackle holds him like an inch short of the line. And so many teams would not be that desperate defending their line when they're up 20 and the final play of the game. So often you would see a player score there. And it took me a second to do the math and go, oh, shit, we would have just won then, because I'd already resigned to the fact that we'd lost it painfully. But even then, it's just cruel. I think the punting gods can be cruel with you sometimes. Because they had that opportunity to win it right then. The other takeaway, Wolford got the start at hooker, debut for the Raiders looked good, and Finucane could be out for an extended period. I think he did a shoulder injury as well as a concussion. Game of the round and maybe grand final preview, could it be, Podonis? Roosters 31 beat the Parramatta Eels 24.
Yeah, this one's the Winnie grand final preview. And a lot of people were saying that the Roosters aren't as good as the Eels, and I saw a lot of 13 pluses to the Eels flying around, but we gave the Roosters a chance, and we probably would have bet them if the line was at that four number, which we didn't quite get that value on Wednesday. And the Roosters came to play, and they had a little bit more to prove, given that they haven't been in the top four side yet. And now you look at the table and who's in fourth and who's in sixth. The Roosters are just ahead of the Eels on four and against there. So it is an open comp, and those teams will trade wins throughout the year. We just need to pick and choose our spots. And I thought that the Roosters came out hard and fast, and they got to a big lead. But the class of Parramatta, when they were down by 16 points, I think it was there. Oh, sorry, 17, because there was
that. They were down by 19.
19. And then, yeah, the class of the Eels scored a few tries in the second half and made it a contest. And I felt in the final 10 minutes, if I had to put my $10 on someone, it would have been the Eels coming for them there, only down by, I think it was four. So a converted try that then Eels would have taken the lead. But then the Roosters scored towards the end to ice it, and caps off a great performance for them. And Robinson couldn't have been more impressed.
You could actually see that in the coach's box, that this was so important to the Roosters, because they've got Penrith next week. They've actually got a murderer's row, which we've spoken about. So they have to win games like this. So they knew that. We didn't take the Roosters, even though we like them. And even though a couple of weeks ago I said, buy now on the Roosters, 13-1 to win the comp. And I think now they're back to single digits and they are in top four. Now, I did post today that actually puts our Dabble multi 8-1 in winning position. The Eels and the Rabbitohs are in the 8. The Storm and the Roosters are in the 4. I'm not getting ahead of myself and saying that it's going to win, because the Roosters do have such a tough schedule. But it is a good thing that they've gotten themselves back into the 4. It meant a lot to them. Their attack has been clicking the last couple of weeks. I actually thought it was their defense, even though they led in 24 points. Their goal line defense kept them in this, because after leading, I think it must have been, it was 25-6 at one stage. Then Parramatta put on 18 straight points and had all the pressure on the Roosters, and the Roosters were able to hang tough, score the try that got him back out by 5 through Suwali, and he's one of the stories of the game. He scored a really special try, that the kind of tries that you've seen, like whether it be guys like Folau, you know, flying in the air, these guys that they seem athletically on a different level. And this kid is 18, and that just reminds you that they've got several match winners in this side. Got him out by 5, and ultimately they hung on and got a penalty late to get that final winning margin of 7 points. They did lose Victor Radley. So now on top of a really tough run of opponents, you're missing your key, like, ball-playing lock. So that is going to hurt the Roosters, but they had to get the 2 points here. And Parramatta, you know, wasn't disgraced either in that one. And the final game, and people are going to want to know what you make of the North Queensland Cowboys and whether you respect them yet, Podonis. They won 36-12 over the West Tigers.
Yeah, I'll tip my hat to the Cowboys here. I thought the Tigers came out hard, and the Tigers were there to play. The Cowboys just ended up grinding him out of the game, and in the end, it was a pretty dominant scoreline there. And you talk about athletes, how about Jeremiah Nanai? Again, another try he scored off a bomb, leaping through wingers and fullbacks. It's incredible what he's doing, and there's a real spirit and energy within that side, and very, very similar to Brisbane, how a lot of these young players are playing well beyond their years of experience, and they're just they're playing what's in front of them, and there's no fear about them. And that's what I like about the Cowboys. And I do think that the Cowboys are a bit better, and I will give them credit for the last 4 to 5 weeks. And I'm happy to admit that we did get the read on the Cowboys wrong, and they're at 7 wins at the moment. And we had them in our season-long multi to have 7.5 or less, and that's I'm happy to call that a loss now. They're not going to go the rest of the season undefeated, but it goes to show that the Cowboys are at another level. And can they make the top four? At this stage, I'll still say no, but they're definitely going to be a team that I'll be happy to bet on to make the top eight, even though the odds are very prohibitive at $1.20.
Yeah, the top four battle is going to be wide open. Like, the Cowboys are flying right now, and they're third, and the Roosters are in the four, and the Roosters are now shorter odds than both Parramatta and the Sharks. And Damien's asking, will the Sharks finish top four? If you're asking me yes, no, I'll say no, because they'd have to overtake Parramatta and the Roosters. But can they? Sure. Like, any of those sides are still in the hunt, for sure. Even Brisbane, it's not crazy now to think that, you know, top four's their goal as well. Let's see what happens with who gets picked for Origin, who gets injured. You know, it's a long season. But they're racking up these wins, the Cowboys, five straight wins. And look, we missed on them. But I was thinking to myself, you know, as I watch the Cowboys every week, like, how did we miss on this team? And I just think you just can't pick these sides out of nowhere all the time, because sometimes it just does come when it's unexpected. And players that you have not seen prove it before just start playing at a much higher level. And collectively, a team just gels together really well and just rides an energy wave. And this Cowboys side are. And they threw everyone off the scent when they lost in round one to the Bulldogs. And pretty much ever since then, they've given a great account of themselves. You've got to give a lot of credit to Toddy Payton. And they're the second best defense in the comp. But they're generating points as well. Nanai is exciting. Tua Lungi, electric outside back. And he had like the assist of the season, maybe the try assist of all time. That was unbelievable. Scored himself and was always threatening. Cotter is a revelation in the middle of the park as well. So you're talking about Cowboys wins and you're not even putting it all on Taumalolo. And Drinkwater's been exceptional since he's been back there as well, and he's been a big part of his win streak. So these are all the reasons. The Cowboys completed every set in the first half as well. It was actually surprising they were down at one stage, but then they scored two late first half tries, got in front, and then never looked back in the second half. And think about the Tigers. They had those pressure-relieving wins where they won back-to-back against, obviously, Parra on Easter Monday, and then backed it up and beat the Bunnies by a field goal. But straight away, I said that, like, they kind of burst their bubble when they couldn't beat the Dragons, when they did lead for long periods in that second half. And before you know it, it's already three straight losses for the Tigers again. And Hastings is back, so they don't have that excuse. But it does go to show they do miss Dane Laurie, I reckon. So that was Magic Round, guys, in the books. Again, hopefully, you know, you enjoyed the weekend, even if our bets didn't go as well as we wanted them to. And, you know, rewinding to the beginning, at least hopefully you guys were among the couple hundred people that got on the try score extravaganza. We just got to get back in the lab again, because we tried to give ourselves good opportunities to win those bets. And certainly at certain stages, I was so happy that we were on those bets. Feel a little bit stiff that neither of them got home. But if I want to look at it a different way, The Cronulla Sharks were not the right side to be on in round 10, and the Bunnies were just not impressive enough, especially second half fell away. So again, back to the drawing board. We want to get better, and we will see you guys Wednesday night, usual time, 6:15, if you want to see it first on YouTube, 6:30 on Facebook, and the pod on the audio pod after that. Thanks for joining me on a Monday night, Padonis. We'll talk again on Wednesday.
For sure. Legal.